Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Day, Mr. 12th Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation, 9,012th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is January the 7th, 2023, or it's the 26th day of Thebe, 2027. We will start our first service today with a song to be named, then we're going to go into our sermon. Taking some time to greet you, volume 149, entitled, What is Religion? Okay. It says, July the 12th, 1947, this was given by B.T. Holler. It's a if humanity needs to know any one thing about another, it is the answer to these two questions. What is religion? Does it profit now and hereafter? If humanity needs to know any one thing above another, it is the answer to these two questions. What is religion? Does it prosper? Or does it profit now and hereafter? It says many think that religion consists of going to church, of praying, of having good morals, not stealing, nor killing, not playing games, not gambling, not attending shows, not eating certain things, of doing, of not doing this, that, and the other. Others think religion is nothing more than some kind of a sociological order, and that the church is a place in which to get acquainted, etc., etc. Let us see. For Yahshua was confronted by the rich young ruler, who said unto him, I have kept the commandment, but yet must I do to enter into the eternal life eternal. Here follows the answer. Luke 18:22. Says, now when Yahshua heard these things, he said unto him, yet lackest thou one thing, sell all that thou hast, and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. To understand this scripture, we must read another, one along with it, John 3:1-3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came unto Yahshua by the night, and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from Yahweh, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest, except Yahweh be with him. But Yahshua answered and said unto him, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of Yahweh. Both the rich young man and the Nicodemus were rulers, and though Nicodemus might not have been as rich as was the young man, he nevertheless was not poor. For why was the one asked to distribute his riches unto the poor, and the other told to be born again? why should not both pay the same price for salvation? Here are the reasons. To avoid being seen in the company of Yahshua, Nicodemus came to him. And by day, but secretly by the night, whereas the young ruler came to Yahshua, not only openly by the day, but also while a multitude were with Yahshua. For the rich young ruler's basic inheritance, therefore, was his wealth. And Nicodemus' basic hindrance was his pride. Plainly then, the one's ailment called for one kind of treatment, and the other's ailment called for another kind of treatment. For Yahshua never asked anyone to take his religion, but he asked them to follow him, to be one of his disciples. The rich young ruler could not follow Yahshua because his heart was centered upon his own riches. And Nicodemus could not follow Yahshua because he was too proud to be seen in the company of the unpopular and hated Yahshua, followed by the humble fisherman. For the removing of the hindrances, the one had to get rid of his riches, and the other had to get rid of his pride. To eradicate pride, one must be born again, must become a new man. But to eradicate the love of money, one must give his money to these who really need it. For the scriptures bear record that the Abraham was very rich, yet he is called the friend of Yahweh. Riches in themselves, therefore, can be a blessing, although they more often become a curse. Pride, however, is never good. Remember that the devil finds in every one of us at least one loophole. Whatever that loophole be, it must be done away with. But the riches be it riches or be it pride. In reality, not all are rich and tied unto their wealth. Really, everyone can be tied unto himself. For the old man, and not all need give up riches, but all need cut loose from the old man, who gets them into everything but what they ought to be in. Let us read again from John chapter 3, verse 4-8. For the Nicodemus saith unto him, how can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? Yahshua answered, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except the man be born of the water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of the Yahweh. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said unto thee, ye must be born of the you must be born again. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou heardest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh, and whither it goeth. So is everyone that is born of the Spirit. For the Nicodemus acknowledged that Yahshua was the Son of Yahweh, made his case exceedingly bad. Knowing who Yahshua was, he should not have been ashamed to be seen in his company, nor should he have been afraid of his enemy. He should have considered a privilege to associate with the Son of Yahweh, with the heavenly being, but inasmuch as Nicodemus was ashamed to be seen with him, and was proud to be with the Pharisees, he needed to bury the old man and to arise in a newness of life. Needed to be born again. For the question, how can a man be born when he is old? Yahshua answered, except a man be born of the water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of Yahweh. Nicodemus had to be baptized, had to publicly acknowledge Yahshua as the Son of Yahweh, and receive the Spirit of the truth. Now, the illustration, the wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh, and whither it goeth. So is everyone that is born of the Spirit. Definitely points out that to really know what it is to be born of the Spirit is to have the experience of being one of his disciples, of being filled with the Holy Spirit, and of the proclaiming of his truth. For Yahshua comparing his followers, those who are born again, with the wind, makes this fact still clear. For if his disciples are like the wind, if no one knows where they come from and where they go to, then the only way to find out is to become one with them. For Yahshua to become one with us, he had to be born again. He had to become an earthly man. And for us to be one with him, we have to be born again, born of the Spirit. For the difference is that Yahshua was first born a spiritual, a divine being, and next a human being, whereas we are first born human beings, and second we're born spiritual beings. Prophetically speaking, of Yahshua's birth, the prophet Isaiah wrote, Isaiah 66:7, "Behold, before she travailed, she brought forth her pain came, as she was delivered of a man-child." For the Jewish church, as a church by which Yahshua was born, inspiration declares neither travail nor had pain. That is, she felt neither need of nor burden for a Savior, and yet in spite of it, he was born. But speaking of the children that are to make up the kingdom, we read, Isaiah 66:8. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such thing? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Okay. Although the Jewish church and thy church they travail not, yet she brought forth the Son of Yahweh. But when Zion travailed, she brings forth all her children at once, as a whole nation, as a miracle in each instant. How may Zion travail? Question mark. Let us turn unto the natural realm and nature. The mother carries the child, then travails, and gives birth unto it. How else then, in the spiritual realm, can Zion travail without first carrying her children before they are born? To be specific, when one joins the church, she is pregnant with him, so to speak. When she is thus carrying her children, then they shall all be born at once. They shall all at once receive the second birth, the birth her here mentioned. And as inspiration makes it clear that they must be born again, they all at the outset must be in the same state of mind as was Nicodemus. A sin to be seen in the company of the present truth, believers. A sin to be associated with the believers of the unpopular truth. Plainly then, our efforts for the reaching of the people with the message of a second birth shall not be in vain. For Zion shall bring forth all her children as it were, in one day. And that is why we cannot be driven to despair or to discouragement. We are assured that the revival and reformation will take place among all of Yahweh's people, that His word will not return unto Him void. Now, who could the children be? Question mark. To be children of the Zion, they must someday stand on the Mount Zion. And in this case, it would be the Mount Zion at the 12th hour, the house of David, tribe of Judah, the lawgiver in charge, as representing this everlasting kingdom of heaven that is set up in Ephesians 4:1-45. They are therefore none other than the first fruits of whom the Revelator said, and I looked and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 having his Father's name written in their foreheads, Revelation 14:1. From the scriptures, it is now clearly seen that in this instance, when one joins the church becomes pregnant with that member. Thus it is that from the time one becomes a member of the church until the time he is born again, he is spiritually developing for the hour of this second birth. Then after he is born again, he is still to keep on growing until he becomes a full-grown, matured, spiritual being, a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the Asherah, without spot or wrinkle, or any such thing. According to this state of the being, no one has as yet reached, but the time is now at hand when a multitude shall reach it. For says the Yeshua, Isaiah 66:9, shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth? Saith Yeshua, shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb? Says the Yahweh. For this scripture endeavors to remove all doubt, let us believe the Yeshua, and know for certain that the time for this particular new birth is here, and that Yeshua can and will make it possible, regardless how it may appear unto us. From this study we see that religion is not made up of the musts and don'ts, that no one is to be tied to a man, but unto Yahweh's ever unfolding truth. That religion means to be following the Yeshua and to be doing those things which he leads one to do, that from the time one accepts Yeshua as his Savior, from that very time he is to begin to grow spiritually, first to be born again, then to become a full-grown spiritual being, not all at once, but to be growing daily. To reach such a high state of the perfection, one must therefore be perfecting himself daily, and be in the keeping with this present truth of the Yahweh, that each spark of the present truth might add unto the amount of the spiritual growth, for the season requires, or else one will fall behind in the reaching of the spiritual maturity. Only thus can one be reaping all the benefits which the religion affords. No religion is not something extra, something optional. It is something which everyone must have, a true and up-to-date religion. Is something as essential as the eyes in your head. For example, let us take you through the stream of time, beginning with the Noah. His religion not only saved him and his family from drowning in the terrible flood, but also made him become the progenitor of the world after the flood. As a progenitor of our world. For the world in his day, though, perished because it felt no need of an up-to-date religion, no need of the present truth. What a shame. What a nonsense for one child to get along without religion, without Yahweh's counsel, and without the message of the hour. Let us take a look at another highlight in the Bible history. For the mother of the Moses believed in up-to-date religion. She believed that the time had come for the deliverance of the Hebrew race, and she did all she could to make it possible. When she saw that she could no longer hide her infant, her son, from the hand of the Pharaoh, she let her religion do the rest. The results were great. Not only did she receive her son again in her arms, forever saved from being thrown into the Nile, but also a guarantee for his support, education, and all the best Egypt could afford were paid from the Pharaoh's treasury. The right kind of religion, you see, does great things. 80 years later, Moses' religion led the whole Hebrew nation from the brickyards of the Pharaoh unto the Red Sea, for the sea parted for their sake, and as soon as they passed through it, closed in on their taskmasters. What a deliverance, what a victory. And that's what our call it is. We're deliverers. We're called to be servants and deliverers of the 144,000. The house of David, the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, with Yahshua coming and taking charge of this kingdom of David himself, and he leads in the deliverance of the 144,000. Ensuring that the 144,000 will be delivered of the Adventist Church. That's the first truth. So that they can be commissioned then to go into all the world to gather their Gentile brethren, all the righteous ones, and bring them back to his holy mountain and Jerusalem. Here in the last 12th parabolic hour. As those millions of men, women, and children also, their cattle came into that forbidden desert place where there was neither food nor water. Religion made the rocks gush with the streams, and the clouds dropped down the manna, not for a day, not for a month, but for 40 long years. Then the miracle of the Red Sea was repeated at the River Jordan, and the emancipated brickmakers became prophets, kings, and priests. Notwithstanding all these great happenings, when they became careless and indifferent, when they felt no need of the prophet, no need of the present truth, no need of the meat of the due season, they again became slaves and captives. That is why we need the right kind of religion, and that is why we need to stick to religion and to grow with it. For the Jews were taken captive and carried into the Babylonian. Nevertheless, those who were faithful unto their religion were well taken care of even in their captivity. For the Daniel, for instance, rather than serving as a slave, was instead treated as a lord, and was at last made a ruler by both the Chaldean and the Medo-Persian kings. And when he was for spite thrown into the lion's den, he was spared while his enemies were eaten up by the wild beasts. When the three Hebrews for the faithfulness to their religion were thrown into the fiery furnace, the Son of Yahweh came and rescued them, and not a hair of their heads perished, for their enemies though were burned to death. But the Hebrews were made rulers in the kingdom of Babylon, of Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. Gideon had to win a war after rescuing 22,000 soldiers, or after recruiting 22,000 soldiers. He was told that they were too many. Consequently, the time killers were removed, and finally there were but 300 left to fight against a multitude that covered the plant. In spite of this small army, Gideon did win the war overnight, and without the loss of a man, religion, brother, sister, when lived up to, is a paying proposition. So if you live up to all the religion that you know, then it's a paying proposition. All could have been Daniel and Gideon. Yes, even the Jews of the day should have been something, but what are they for as a nation hated by all the people in the world? A nation without a king, without a flag, without a land, as the only such nation on earth. Now let me tell you an experience that is strictly personal. and news to most of you. Several years ago, while I was crossing one of the busy streets of the Los Angeles, California, a woman from my left drove squarely into me. She then became so nervous that she could not stop her car, but kept going for a half block. The car, though, did not tip me over. An unseen hand carried me ahead of it, and when the car stopped right at the alley which crossed the street, I stopped too. By that time, hundreds of spectators, including news reporters and three motor cops, had gathered around the car. As they found no one lying in the street, dead or wounded, they then decided the victim must have been pinned under the car. When I told them that it was I who had been hit, they wondered, as I told them that I was not hurt, and as I refused to be taken to the hospital, they made me raise up my hands and arms, and they asked dozens of questions. The pencil in my coat pocket had been crushed by the impact of the car into about a dozen pieces, but my ribs were untouched. Then one from among the crowd said, "He must be made of rubber. Religion, you see, is better than an insurance policy. From our study, we perceive that Yahweh's power that protected life even in the fire furnace and in the lion's den is still at work, that Yahweh is still as much interested in his people today as he was in the Daniels or in any other day. We therefore need an up-to-date religion every day. We cannot afford to be without it, no, not even for a moment. Timely truth not only saves our souls for eternity, but it protects us from day to day. It supplies our needs today and gives us hope for the hereafter. There is safety in nothing else, and faith in the Yahweh is our only peace of mind, especially in this day and age. Religion obviously is profitable not only for hereafter, but certainly for today as well. Do not play the fool by trying to get along without it." And the volume 1 of the Timely Reading, number 48. Number 5 has to do with what is life is but what we make it. July 19, 1947, by the Vitya Hollow. Okay. I just finished on Tommy Green's number 49. Now I'm going to do one Tommy Green number 50. This says, "To find out that life is really what we make it, I shall bring to attention 7 examples beginning in Noah's day and ending in our day. The name of this sermon is Life is What We Make, but What We Make It." That's Text of Address, July 19, 1947, by Vitya Hollow. It's example number 1, Noah was commanded to build an ark and to tell the world that a flood was to cover the earth, that only those who would get into the ark would escape alive. 120 years later, the animals were strangely seen to march two and two into the ark. Noah and his family also went in, while the rest of the world laughed and ridiculed. But when the rain began to pour, the situation ceased to be funny. Those outside the ark cried, mourned, and pled, but all perished as the fools only because it has failed to give heed unto the present truth and failed to feed on the meat in the due season. What folly, what disaster. One would think that after the deluge, the world would have had a great respect for religion and for the prophets of the Yahweh. But that was not the case, for the antediluvians did not believe Noah's prediction that there was to be a flood, so they refused to go into the ark. But the flood came, and they perished, for the post-diluvians did not believe his prediction that there was not to be another flood, so they set about to build the Tower of the Babel. But when Yahweh saw the tower skyrocketing, he blasted the top of it and confounded the builder's language. That is, he blotted their own language from their minds and carved into them the language of today. Thus he caused the birth of the various races and languages which we today find even in the remotest parts of the earth. It was not Yahweh's purpose that the people should stack themselves in the plains of the Shinar, but that they should spread out and replenish the earth. And so when they refused to obey his command, he gave them the next best he had for them, and that they had to obey. His work in the man's work, independent of and contrary unto the others, you see, is certain to meet with disaster. A house that is built on the sand cannot survive a storm, and no man can possibly defeat Yahweh's purpose. For men, do not make a fool of yourselves by trying. It takes years in the schools of the men to learn a language, but in the school of Yahweh it takes but a moment. He can blot out one language from the man's brain and carve in another, and at the same time change the features of his face and the color of his skin. Yes, Yahweh can do all this more quickly than a dentist can pull a tooth. But whether a change be made for better or for worse all depends upon the individual. Example number two. For the Nebuchadnezzar was given a dream. That was the king of Babylon. Being troubled with it, he summoned the wise men of his realm to tell him the interpretation of it. They came, but there was nothing that they could do, unless Daniel was brought before the king. And hearing the king's story of the dream, Daniel said, Daniel 4:24-28, "For this is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which is come upon thy Lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as the oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree root, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule, came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. For the king heard the interpretation of it, and he understood the decree. Nevertheless, he was not willing to admit that there was one greater than he. Then it came to pass that Daniel 4:29-30, at the end of the 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. For the king spake and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" What a statement to make after having heard Yahweh's decree, for the king had yet to learn that Yahweh rules the nation, sets up kings, and disposes kings. Let us now hear Yahweh's answer unto the king's father. It says, Daniel 4:31-33. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, for the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. For they shall make thee to eat grass as the oxen, and 7 times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. For the same hour was the thing fulfilled upon the Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, and did eat grass as the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven, until his hairs were grown like the eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws. Some, even to this day, do not realize that Yahweh rules, that men are not independent of him, although they are permitted to choose whether or not to serve him. It was not necessary for the Chaldean king to live with the beast of the field, but as he could not learn his lesson by the words the easy way, he was removed from his palace and put into a corral, there to learn by experience and the hard way. At the end of the 7 years after he had graduated, so to speak, from the Yahweh school of the hard knocks, the king walked back into the palace and said, Daniel 4:34-37, "And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed, and he doeth according unto his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me." Okay. "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of the heaven, all whose works are the truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in the pride he is able to obey. Through pride and disloyalty unto Yahweh, Nebuchadnezzar made life miserable for himself, but at last he did awake. Example number 3, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom continued until the reign of his grandson, Belshazzar. Belshazzar knew his grandfather's history and his experience with Yahweh, but he failed to profit by it. He made a great feast unto 1,000 of his lords and commanded that the vessels which the Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem be brought to the feast, so that the king himself and his princes, wives, and counselors might drink therefrom. As soon as this revelry took place, there came forth fingers of a man's hand, which wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. Belshazzar was greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Then was Daniel brought before the king, and Daniel emphatically declared, Daniel 5:18-31, O thou king of the Most High Yahweh, gave Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, a kingdom, and majesty, and glory, and honor, and for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he cut down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened and the pride, he was disposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. For they fed him with the grass like the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heavens, till he knew that the Most High Yahweh ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all these, but hast lifted up thyself against Yahshua of the heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of the silver and gold and brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the gods and whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy words, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written, and this is the writing that was written, many, many tekel upharsin, this is the interpretation of the thing, many, Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom, and finished it, Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances, and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given unto the Medes and the Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they closed Daniel with the scarlet, and put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. What a difference it would have been in the scroll of history if Belshazzar had profited by the priceless lesson which his grandfather had learned. Just what a difference it would have made. This is a needful lesson for us all, kings and peasants alike. Example number 4. For the Chaldean Empire became a Medo-Persian Empire, and not because the Medes and the Persians were stronger and mightier, but because Yahweh has so decreed. Let us see. Isaiah 45:1. Thus saith Yahshua unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. For the Cyrus, under whose command the Medo-Persian army marched into the Babylon, had not yet been born when the prophet Isaiah wrote of him. But Yahweh remembered his promise, and when Belshazzar felt perfectly secure on the night of the revelry and fatal debauchery, Yahweh opened before Cyrus the two-leaved gates and made possible the capture of the kingdom. There, the Medes and the Persians met Daniel and his companion, who called Cyrus' attention unto the scriptures, which not only predicted his victory, but even foretold his name. Having seen and felt the power of the Yahweh, Cyrus was moved to decree. Ezra 1:2-11. Thus says Cyrus, king of the Persia, for the Yahweh of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in the Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His Yahweh be with him, and let him go up unto Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Yahweh of the Israel. He is the Yahweh which is in Jerusalem, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with the silver and with the gold and with the goods and with the beast, besides the free will offering for the house of Yahweh that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, with all them whose spirit Yahweh had raised to go up for the building of the house of the Yahshua, which is in Jerusalem, and all they that were about them strengthened their hands with the vessels of the silver, with the gold, with the goods, and with the beast, and with the precious things, besides all that was willingly offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which the Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods. Even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of the Mithridat, the treasurer, and numbered them unto Shalphazar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them: 30 charges of the gold, 1,000 charges of the silver, 29, 30 basins of the gold, silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 8,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. All these did Shalbezar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from the Babylon unto Jerusalem. It is not difficult to see that if the rulers of the Medo-Persian Empire had continued to rule in the same spirit as the Tsars, their kingdom would have stood until this day. For that kingdom, though, gave way to Grecia, Grecia to Rome, and Rome to the nations of today. Plain enough it is to see that the kingdom of today still stands because Yahweh has proposed it so. For they're growing more and more independent, Yahweh will sooner or later bring the end of them too. For looking down the stream of the time, down unto the kingdoms of today, which are depicted by the feet and the toes of the great image, and that's here in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now. This is present truth. This is for what the Spirit of the truth wrote. And whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of the iron, for the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the marrow of clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken, and whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the marrow of clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one unto another, even as iron is not mixed with the clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom, and that's the kingdom that he has given Elijah David, with Yahshua sitting on the throne of David. His son is in occupying this kingdom even today. Yahshua the invisible king, and Elijah David as the visible king, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh has made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:41-45. Rather than merging unto the kingdom of Yahweh, they will have to be destroyed. Example number 5. Now let us see what benefit the kingdoms and nations reap from coming in contact with the church. For the Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia and Rome, who came into contact with the church, make up the civilized world of today. 8. Look at the nations and people. People say heathen in the somewhat isolated places of the earth, who were not so fortunate as to meet the church as early as the other nations. Still further, look at those who are still more isolated in the remotest parts of the earth, who have had no contact with the church, not until just recently. Most of them are but a little better than animals, not only in the intelligence, but in the even in the progress. The people who were fortunate enough to be the closest unto the religion of the Yahshua are, you will find, as the most intelligent, the most prosperous. England, for example, who translated the Bible and published and scattered it throughout the world unto all the peoples and languages, became the greatest of the nations in its time. Then the United States brought a sister nation to the English Empire, who less than two centuries ago founded this government upon the principle of the Bible and inscribed on this dollar "In God We Trust," and who also established the American Bible Society, and but a comparatively few years became the greatest of nations, and did the Hebrews in their day. On the other hand, those who turned against the religion of the Bible were left desolate. Their blessings became a curse unto them, for they hated Jews, for whom there is no spot on earth, are the best example. For the Germany, who led out in the Reformation, but who turned back from it, has reaped a sorrowful harvest too. And what is true with the nations is just as true with the individuals, homes, families, and communities. If you will take a little time to observe, you will see this law of the blessings and curses in the demonstration everywhere without the exception, for the world was founded upon the religion, and you can rest assured that when religion disappears from the earth, the world will disappear with it. Those who fall in love with the truth will find that blessings will reciprocally fall in love with them. Let us read 2 Thessalonians 2:8-12. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all the power and signs and lying wonders, and with all the deceivableness of the unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Yahweh shall send them strong delusions, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in the unrighteousness. This brings the end of our study. This is our contest at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.